When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Far back to pass, takes a deep drop, steps up, looking to his right, and the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 302, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. We opened up with the Yankee baseball as they dropped the first game of the series against the White Sox, 12-2, embarrassing form, ugly, ugly loss, 2-for-18 with runners in scoring position. They had 20 runners on base in this game, 20, 11 walks. I think I saw that... It's the first time they had that many runners on and that many runners in scoring position and only scored two runs since like 1912. That is an extremely hard thing to do, what they accomplished last night, being that inept offensively with runners in scoring position. 2-for-18, that's a series. You go 2-for-18 with runners in scoring position. Embarrassing loss. But the big news of the day, as well as the Yankees, you know, embarrassing themselves in Chicago, was Hassan Reddick, a formerly requested a trade out of New York and away from the Jets. They have in kind replied, both apparently publicly and privately, that they will not trade him, and nor should they. As soon as I saw the news, like I was like, they're not trading him. I put out the tweet, like the John Candy gif I love so much from Uncle Buck. No. Why would they trade him? What actually happened here is hard to understand. That's the first and foremost. The idea this guy has now asked for two trades within a few months is just mind-boggling. And for him to stand there in that press conference and talk the way he did about how he was going to be here, however long it was, and he was going to play for the fans and play for his teammates and like all of that, and sounding happy and with it. And from that moment on, never to be around the team. Like, he did that press conference and got out of Dodge and has never been heard from again. Now, the word from Jets camp is that they made it very clear to him that they needed him to produce for the Jets first. That they knew he wanted this contract, but they were going to make the trade, which, by the way, is a third round pick, a pick that could become a second round. And 2 years from now, it's a conditional third round pick. And they bring him over instead of keeping Huff, which the Eagles end up signing him. They bring him over with the guidelines of, hey, come play for us, because we have players right now in Reed and other guys who are looking for money, and we can't just pay you right now. Trade for you and pay you right now, what kind of message would it send to the clubhouse? That's what Connor was saying on Twitter. I was watching him on SNY. Connor Hughes was talking about how that's how the Jets felt. Like, they have guys in that building who've been looking for money, and to just pay Riddick right away would be a disaster for them in that building. So come here, play for us, give us a little bit, and we'll figure out your contract. And apparently, everyone was on board with that. And somewhere along the lines, and this is where LOL Jets and the Jets being the Jets is coming to focus here, where what exactly happened? Now, yes, typically, and the way you want to do it is the way the Giants made this deal. You want to have a deal done. You don't want to have ambiguity. You don't want to have to worry about whether or not this guy's going to understand, agree to this, feel the same way once he's over here. Like, everything that went wrong is avoided if they can figure out some contract before he gets traded here. But clearly they had a problem with it, and they still went along with the trade. Now, whether that was they were very close and felt like a deal was imminent, or whether, you know, they had a real strong affirmative understanding from both him and his people, his agency, that he was going to play this season under the current contract. Whatever the case may be, the Jets look foolish here that they even allowed this situation to pop up. And the thing for me is, like, if I'm the Jets right now, I'm in, like, I think they have really all the cards, barring the season starting and injuries taking place, clearly. Because, I mean, look, this defense has been, they're strong unit, no doubt. I mean, they have McDonald. They have Clemens, who can get after the passer a little bit. They obviously have Quinn and Williams up front. Like, they still have a good front. Now, if they get no rush in the first couple of weeks, okay, maybe there's incentive. But it being a third round conditional pick, they're never going to get even that minimal value back. There's absolutely no reason to trade him. I'm not sure what Reddick is going to accomplish here, because as the weeks go by, the money comes off. He's losing too much money to even try and make up. What kind of contract do you think they're going to give him when you're playing this kind of tactic? Like, I don't understand any of it. Now, there is some pressure to just get it done with it and pay him and bring him here, because look, the Jets are all in. Right? The Jets are all in, and they need as many good football players as they can get. This is the year. This year, next year, however long Aaron Rodgers wants to play, this is the year. And to have this hanging over the team is embarrassing, first off, because when the news broke today, you know, collective hands to foreheads of everyone associated with the Jets took place, and the embarrassment level of just the idea that they even allowed this to happen when they had a pass rusher in their building last year who came up through them, who worked his ass off, and who was one of the better edge rushers in the sport. Let him go to the Eagles, the team you made the trade with, and now you've brought in this headache, and he doesn't want to sign a contract. He doesn't want to negotiate with you, or you don't want to negotiate with him until he shows up. I mean, that's really the one thing, though. The one thing I'll say is, as much as I agree with the Jets that I don't trade him, and I would like to see him in the building and compete and play for the Jets before I give him a contract, I mean, you're under pressure here, and if you're going to pay him anyway, if the guys, like, if you told him, come here and play and we'll pay you. Like, if that was the understanding, like, are you literally going to let him not showing up right now, him not being in the building, be the difference between you having a cohesive unit that's working together, that's practicing together, that you know where he is, you can get with him, you can coach him up, you can start this defense, which, look, we all expect the offense to be far better this year, but even with Aaron Rodgers and even with, you know, some of the weapons they have in Wilson and Hall, you still need this defense to probably be your strongest unit. And I understand the Jets view this as a luxury because of what they have in the building already and the asset they use to attain them. They're viewing this as, hey, we have them, great. We don't. And unless things change, unless there's injuries or weeks go by and there's no pass rush and it's becoming a major problem for this team and costing them games, I'm not sure what motivation they'll have to get a deal done other than the idea that the fan base and everybody else is going to be. I mean, but once the season starts, like, it goes quiet if they're winning. It goes loud if they're losing. But this whole situation is just bizarre. And, you know, unfortunately, this is what it reminds me of, or what I'm compelled to think of, is that the Jets need to freaking win to stop this stuff. And now Joe Douglas, who has had an up-and-down tenure with the New York Jets, hasn't done any winning, has had good drafts, has had bad drafts. His particular thing that he's been great on is making trades. That's what he's done. That's where he's done his best work, whether it's the Adams trade or, like, he's done his best work trading, whether it's bringing in Rodgers, getting all those picks for Adams, and yet this trade is now blown up in his face. And ultimately, I think they're doing right now all they can do. The mistakes they made were prior to all this. They're handling this situation. I think you should have to come into the building to get paid. I think you should have to come in here, show good faith. We talked about this before we made the trade. You went out there on a press conference, talked about how you're going to be here and play for your teammates, and like, and now you're not going to show up and you expect us to just hand you a contract? The Jets have him under contract next year as well. This whole thing could take a year and a half to figure out. I don't think it will. I think at some point he's going to end up playing for them this year before he realizes how much money he's losing. But they need to win to stop this stuff, man. I saw Sean talk about the arrogance of the organization. And I understand that thought process, that you thought the Jets were... Like, Joe Douglas felt that this team was with Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers makes everybody happy. Everyone wants to come play for Aaron Rodgers. It's transformed the organization. So we got a Super Bowl contender here. You don't want to come play for Aaron Rodgers. We promised you a contract. Down the line, why not show up? Everything's going to be great. We'll make the trade with that, with just a sort of a wink and a handshake deal, nothing written in stone, and we'll bring him in here and then make him so happy because our coach is so, you know, wonderful with words and such a motivator, and plus we have Aaron Rodgers and everything's kumbaya here. Taking ayahuasca and enjoying ourselves, that, hey, he'll come in here, want to fit right in. But at the same time, if they are a little bit more of winners, then the situation probably plays out a hell of a lot better. Like, they just need to figure out how to get away from being the laughingstock organization of the NFL. And if that means paying someone to make the story go away, or paying someone to make sure you have an edge rusher to get after the quarterback so you can win, like, that's part of it too. And especially for a group right now that have their job strictly because of the quarterback they traded for, coached, and his willingness to play ball and be in their corner, like, this is a year they have to win. And this whole situation is mind-boggling, but right now I don't know how else the Jets handle it. I think the Jets are doing the only thing they can do from this point on. Any mistake that's made, it was already made. All they can do now is just, like, are you going to pay him? I don't know what kind of message that sends to your team. The only thing they can do now is let him waste away, lose all this money until he comes back. This defense is presumably good enough to live without him. You're not going to get the same value back. You can't trade him. That's out of the question. The only thing they could do now is just pay him or try and convince him to show up and work on a contract. But what happened here along the lines is impossible to figure out. And ultimately, the Jets are going to get flack from their fan base and flack from the NFL because they're the Jets. And somewhere along translation, here's the main story, I would think, that a lot of people see it. Guy wanted a contract in Philadelphia. He asked out. Why would you think it'd be okay to bring him here and not give him the contract? What could he have possibly told you? And despite the press conference, he hasn't been around the team at all in any way. And yet something dramatically different. Like, what dramatically different? Here's a player who didn't want to play for the Eagles without a contract, got traded over, wanted a contract. You knew it then, you know it now. What dramatically has changed? Now, there's nuance to it, but that's, I'm sure, how it's perceived in many circles. It's the Jets doing stupid things. Jets bringing in players who clearly want to get traded, players who clearly want contracts, promising them contracts, you know, I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. And he didn't want to hear it. And now you've got a real headache on your hand, and a player who's a legitimate pass rusher, who's the only pass rusher to have double-digit sacks in the last 4 years, just not with your team. And you traded away a third-round conditional pick for absolutely nothing. And all it's gotten you is grief and embarrassment. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. So we'll talk a little Jets, little Giant quarterback situation as well, because I'm still baffled at what's some perceived stuff about this quarterback room, because I'm very, very nervous. And a lot of people now, if you listen, I haven't given my over-unders yet. I haven't given my Giants record yet. We still got time for that. I'm going to go think about that in Orlando, and I'll come back to you next week or 2 weeks from now with it. But a lot of people starting to get on this Giant train. A lot of people telling you, I think they could be sneaky good. I'm nervous as hell.
Annoy people on the quiet car and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
So the Jets doing all they can. In my mind, this is how they handled it. I think they have really the leverage here until, you know, In fact, it just feels like the leverage is going to be, it sounds like the leverage is going to be decided by how they play. So Hassan Reddick is betting on the Jets to not play well. So, I mean, that's been a successful bet for a long time. Because if the Jets are winning, and if the Jets' defense is playing the way it's played for most of the last 2 years, there have been glaring exceptions to that rule. But if they play well and the front seven plays well, which I do think they have the players, even without Reddick, to play well, the defensive backfield's one of the best in football. And I think with Aaron Rodgers, the offense has a chance to be dynamic. So if they're playing games, if they're playing well, with every win, the less pressure, the less need that there is to make sure they get him in the building. Where, in the opposite, if they get torched against the Niners, if they come nowhere near Brock Purdy, if they get embarrassed Monday night in San Francisco, maybe, but here's the thing. Like, if you're Hassan Reddick and you're making that bet, okay. Week one, San Francisco, no doubt, very good team. You know, trying to get back to the Super Bowl. Good offensive line. Brock Purdy plays well. They have offensive weapons. It sounds like they're gonna re-sign Ayuk. They got plenty of options and weapons, no doubt. Could be a bad game. Then they play Tennessee. Then they play New England. Then they play the Broncos. Then they play the Vikings. I mean, you could be easily looking at the Jets being 4-1 after week five. And if they're 4-1, nobody's going to be calling about Riddick. Nobody's going to be screaming, where is he? It feels like right now the Jets are doing the only thing they can, which is not trade him, which would be stupid, and wait for him to show up and start negotiating in good faith. I mean, I guess it's, you know, just about the money for this year. Apparently he wants a longer contract. I guess that's why holding out, or, you know, they could figure something out. But some of this guaranteed money, like the thought was, you know, some of this money that's not guaranteed for this year will turn guaranteed. And that's how they were going to get through this year and see and get to a long-term contract. And now apparently that's not good enough, but he's losing money by the day. And once it gets into the season, it's a hefty price. I think the Jets have more leverage right now, especially the early part of that schedule. 888-808-1019. Let's go to John in Maspeth. What's up, John?
Yeah, how's it going, C-Mac? You know, I agree. You know, the Jets don't have the Jets have all the leverage, and you know, this guy Hassan Reddick has zero. Well, once the season starts, he's going to be losing $800,000 per game.
Yep.
And once he misses six games, I believe the Jets keep him for next year.
Yep.
You know, so
he's under contract with the Jets next year. Yeah. The only leverage he would have is if the season starts, if they start playing poorly defensively as the season starts. Like, that's if Brock Purdy and the 49ers run all over them and put up 40, 45, suddenly it's like, wow, this defense isn't good enough. But that's about it.
And the way this Jets defense is, I don't see them really being affected too much without him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think Connor Hughes was talking about the Jets view him as a luxury. They made this third round. They made this trick for this pick trade. Excuse me, I was combining trade and pick in the same word. They made this trade
third round pick
for a third round conditional pick. Like,
it could turn into a second,
but it's snaps. Yeah, but he's not right now. That's not a fear. So I mean, it's a third round pick.
He's got his agent is terrible. You know, these players are taking the old habits from players under the old CBA where holding out was effective.
Yeah.
But he needs to learn the new thing, the hold in, the show up and say you got a cramp, you know?
Right.
That's what he needs to do. But even if he does that, teams are going to call his bluff, maybe blackball him and be hesitant to sign him as a free agent at age 31.
No, sitting out, there's no doubt. We saw it with Le'Veon Bell, and we would see the same thing here. Not playing the games is not going to benefit him in any way. There is no doubt. He is not going to benefit from not playing. He's not going to get the contract he wants. He's not. He's all he's doing is missing a year of what is a very short NFL life. Like, that's just the fact of the matter. Not specifically him, just in general. And just in life, and you get so many years at this. You get so many years at this. And to throw away one for the possibility and really of what? Like, how much more are you going to get? It's just, you know, but it's, is he banking on the Jets or the Jets? Is he banking on the idea that, you know, this is an all-in year for them? They made the trade. They have no choice but to pay him. They're not going to trade him. I can't imagine anybody would want to take on this headache for anything better. And how could you trade him for less? Like, how much less could you trade him for? A sixth? You're going to trade him for like a fifth or a sixth? And lose three rounds of picks for nothing over 2 months? Like, you can't do it. You can't do it. Matt in Maryland, what's up, Matt?
I hear what you're saying, but he's going to be bad for the locker room. If he comes in without getting his money, he's going to be a whole bunch of drama with the rest of the players. He's going to be telling the guy
without getting the money.
You know?
Yeah. So you want to just trade him to get rid of him?
You really ain't got no choice.
Yeah, I disagree. I disagree. I can't just diminish the value. Like I traded for you. Well,
just let him sit. And actually, it hurts him because he doesn't lose a year by sitting.
Right.
So he can't even, you know, and he'll still be stuck with the Jets at the end of the year.
Right. No. That's what I don't get it. I understand your point that if he's forced to come back because he's lost this, you know, game tug of war, and he has to blink first, and he comes in, he says, okay, you know, blah blah blah, but he's unhappy and miserable that he's going to be an issue. But here's the problem: if this is all about money, right? This is what I would say to him.
It's beyond money. Now it's respect.
I understand. People view both as the same. Money is respect when it comes to professional sports. So my point is if you tell him, all right, you can come in here, you want to be a malcontent, fine, you know, what's the going rate for a malcontent who doesn't play well, who held out, and like you know, where do you think you're going? Who's paying you? If not me, who?
Man, I guess it is representation, man. He got it. Oh gosh, he's probably gonna have to. He's gonna have to blame somebody because this is. He's gonna get humbled because
he asked for multiple trades in a 4 or 5 month span.
You can't force this. You have no leverage. You can't force the Jets' hand. The Jets could say, you know what, just sit and don't play. He's going to be Le'Veon Bell. He's going to sit, not get his money.
Right. Well, I mean,
he's going to wait next year.
The leverage, the leverage he believes he has is the Jets traded for him for a reason, and that he's an excellent player, and the Jets are trying to win. And the Jets have an excellent player just sitting on the sidelines when all they have to do is just pay him what he wants, and they could have an all-pro in his mind, you know, and he has been, but an all-pro edge rusher to help this defense win a Super Bowl in a must-win type situation that they're in. So, I mean, that's what he thinks his leverage is. His leverage is you got the fans and media calling you stupid for even trading for me. You need to win this year. You got an aging Aaron Rodgers. You only got a limited amount of time to try and win this thing. You did give away a third round compensatory pick, whether it, you know, or, you know, whatever it may be. And I mean, and you, now you're just going to allow me to just sit out here and not play for you? Like, that's the leverage he believes he has.
Nah, but I think if the owner had made the statement, it would have been a lot more powerful. The buck stopped. Hey, listen.
Yeah.
You either get in here, you know, I don't care. This is ridiculous. You said you were going to come. You agreed to this.
Yeah.
And now you're backing out Actually, you just straight lied to us.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, who lied? Somewhere, you know, Stan Riddick believes.
Somebody lied.
Yeah.
You know? And he lied. It just... I don't know. I don't know how he goes in that locker room. Because you're going to be known as a liar. Nobody's going to want to rock with you. And even the players are going to look at him sideways. Like, you know, like, dad. You know, who are you? What are you about? You know, integrity is important.
No, of course. It's hard. Yeah, listen. Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the one thing I'll say. They understand it now because this game is a brutal game, right? I talk about this all the time. I'm not mad at Hassan Reddick. I'm not. I'm not a Jet fan, but even if I were, they are literally, and he is specifically, literally risking, if not his life, which on some ways he is, but even if not his life, I mean, he's risking the well-being of his golden years. I mean, this is a brutal sport that takes a lot out of you, that beats up your body. And they do it for our entertainment. They do it so I can enjoy that I can have a great Sunday. Now, they do it for a lot of money, no doubt. I'm not trying to say they don't. But I don't begrudge a single NFL player, especially in a world of non-guaranteed contracts. I don't begrudge a single NFL player feeling when it's their time and they have the leverage and they have the opportunity. Because if a team had the leverage and the opportunity to not pay them, that's exactly what would happen. So if they feel they have the leverage, the opportunity, the inclination, and the ability to hold out, hold in, as the last caller mentioned, or whatever the case may be, to try and make sure they get paid, do it. Do what you feel is right. Because this sport is relentless, it's unforgiving, and it takes a toll on your body like few other things in this world. And they do it so, you know, we can eat chicken wings that cost way too much money and watch football. So go get your money. But it also comes to a situation where it doesn't make sense. And you're not in that situation where you have the leverage, you have the ability. I don't know if he does. He's going to find out. And so far, I don't think he's heard much. And that's probably why he's demanded the trade, because he's like, now they're not even talking to me. They said they wouldn't until you showed up. And you haven't showed up. So I don't know where this ends. Eventually, he's going to play for this team one way or another. You know, Joe Douglas strikes me as the kind of guy who's not going to budge off this thing. But right now, again, to me, this is going to come down to how it goes. If he's willing to hold out to the season, if he's willing to miss time, if he's willing to miss games in the season, that's where it's going to... If Rodgers goes down, God forbid, or this team struggles out of the gate, they get blown out by San Francisco, they lose to Tennessee, they're 0-2, and the defense has given up 30 points a game, something along... I mean, it's not impossible. Crazier things have happened, Jet fans. Suddenly, the leverage is switched hands. And suddenly, Reddick is sitting out there going, hey, you traded for me for a reason. You need me. Come pay me. But as of right now, I don't know if there is an end in sight. And I do understand the idea. I don't think you could trade him. I honestly don't. I don't think you can just trade for a guy in April for a third, a third round pick, and then trade him for a fourth or a fifth at the best in August. Like, I just don't think that you can't do that. Like, you can't be that inept. You can't be that much of a failing organization to literally throw away two round picks publicly like this. Now, this is ugly. This is a talking point. This is a story. Everyone's talking about it. I get it. It goes away once the games start. And it either goes away with winning, or it'll rear its ugly head with losses, and then they'll deal with it then. But until then, they're going to see how long he decides to continue to lose checks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
It's time for new headphones. Now, I've had enough. Every night at some point, they come, you know, they come right off. I got to put them back on. The padding part comes off the ear, and the padding is leaving little flecks of, you know, I don't know what material, the black plastic of a headphone, earphone. It's just, it's like all over the back of my ears. It's just, and I don't, I always say to myself, it's time to get new headphones. I'm too busy buying stupid stuff like backpack, cooler backpacks for Disney and rash guards. Because, you know, and here's the other thing too. Like, I'm having a weird fat guy thing. Can I give you a fat guy thing? All right. Here's my weird fat guy thing. Okay. And I feel like me and you are close, so we could talk about this. All right. Going on vacation. I have a pool in my neighborhood. I have friends in the neighborhood. We have families that we're friendly with. And we, you know, we say, hey, you going to the pool today? Going to the pool today? So I'm at the pool a lot with all of, you know, people in the neighborhood I don't know well. But point being, although I am heavy set, and we'll go there, I'm not one of these guys who are afraid to take their shirt off at the pool. I'm just not. I know what it is. It is what it is. I am who I am. I love who I am. But for this vacation, especially in Orlando, I despise constantly having to put on suntan lotion. Like a suntan screen, a block, whatever, not lotion. I'm not trying to look like Fabio, get a tan. I tan relatively easy. But I'm just tired of the heat is so bad, and I got a sunburn so bad once in Punta Cana that I was never really a sunblock kind of guy, and I went down to the Dominican Republic and never in my life. My shoulders were so bad, we went for a couples massage and they wouldn't touch me. They were just like, we're going to put some aloe on towels and lay them on you, and we can't give you a massage. Your whole back is going to fall apart.
Aloe vera is your best friend
right
during those vacations.
No doubt. But I just I hate constantly having to put on the sunblock. Hate it. It smells funny. It makes your hands oily. You feel like then it comes off in the water. The water beads off of you funny. The whole thing, I just don't like it. So it's not so much anything other than that I'm looking into one of those shirts that you wear that is designed to wear in the pool. It even comes with, like, I guess some sort of like 50 SPF. Like in the shirt to help you from getting sunblock. But here's my issue. Because I am, you know, large, and because I'm self-conscious, I'm going to feel like everyone's assuming that I'm wearing this shirt because I don't want to not wear a shirt. And that's not the case. I don't care. I've been on these Disney vacations. I've done it. What do I care? They don't know me. They don't know who I am. I mean, so I've actually been recognized there, but that's not the point. That was back when I was on TV. Now I'm in the middle of the morning. No one knows who if I sang Bobby Darin, maybe one person would turn ahead. I don't know. But I'm like struggling with the idea. My wife's like, well, you hate the suntan lotion. Why don't you just get one of those shirts? They're nice looking. You can wear them in and out of the pool. I'm like, yeah, but everyone's going to think I'm doing it because I'm fat. I don't want that perception. I don't want people thinking I'm afraid to take my shirt off. I'm not. It's more tactical. So I don't know what to do. Should I not think about what anybody thinks and just do what is best for me? Probably. But I know the whole time I'm going to be in the pool. And now listen, a lot of people wear shirts. People in fine shape wear shirts because they don't want to get sunburned and they don't want to have to worry about sunblock. So, I mean, it's not like it's, but it's just, I know in my mind, I'm going to be thinking everyone thinks I'm wearing a shirt because I don't want to take it off.
I don't know if this is stupid of me, but I always thought people wearing a shirt going into the pool just based off laziness.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Like, I don't know, just like there's even the NJ diet ads. Like, don't be the guy who has to wear a shirt in the pool. Like, there's just, like, you know, it is what it is. You got to take your shirt off when you go to the pool. I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, it's not like you can't look at me. It's not like I'm some sort of beast who can't be, you know, it is what it is. But it's not like, you know, horrible. But it's not about that. But I feel like it's the same thing with like the Super Bowl, the party stuff I've always talked about. Like I'm self-conscious about little, I'm self-conscious about some heavy set situations. Like at a party, I can't be the first one to go get food. If there's like a, if like we're at a Super Bowl party or something and everybody's like, please come eat. We got wings. We got Hero. We got this. Come on. All right, guys, time to eat. I can't be the first one there. I can't be the first one to walk in line and get a sandwich. Because I'll know people like, oh, someone had to rush up here. Someone's hungry. Like, I have to wait. I have to wait until everybody gets a slice. I don't get the first choice. Because I know people are going to be like, of course, look at this guy. Of course he had to go get it first. And I feel the same way about putting on a shirt in the pool. I want to. I want to stop worrying about sunblock. I want to wear a hat in the pool. I bought a brand new hat, and I don't look good in hats because the thing about my heavy set nature is it also has landed right on my face. So I got like this round face that when I wear a hat, it makes my face rounder. So I don't typically wear hats. I've lost a little bit of weight, slimmed down in the face slightly, and so I bought a hat, and I bought one of those, like, you know, I don't know what you would call them, just sun hats, where it's, you know, it's almost like a safari
bucket
hat. Yeah, not kind of like a bucket hat. It has a rim. It's like, you know, it's like
a visor.
It's like, no, I love, first of all, visors are my jam. I have multiple visors. I've told you about my visor game. You're aware of my visor game?
I'm not, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, I made visors cool in the late 90s, early 2000s, okay? I had a visor collection. I think at one point, I had about 25 to 30 visors.
Wow.
And I had them all matched with my shoes. I would wear the same color visor with, I had like, because I worked at Sandcastle, and instead of saving my money and investing it, so I'd be much better off today, I spent all the money I made when I was bartending at 16, 17 years old, or bar backing. And all that money went straight into shoes and visors. And I would have visors that would, you know, color coordinate with my sneakers. I was a big visor guy.
Were those the visors that you could still see the hair?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's what a visor is. And I would do my hair. I would spike my hair with the visor. Yeah,
I can see that. Yeah.
Oh, of course. Of course. That was the look. Slightly askew to the left. It wouldn't be the head-on visor. I'd have to have it slightly this way. But yeah, I was always rocking visors. And, you know, I had Viacom, Volcom, golf ones too, but mainly Nike, Adidas, but I had a whole bunch, and not sports. Now I have a couple of Yankee ones because I'm an old guy. I just buy Yankee ones, but I feel like there aren't as many. But there were companies that just made visors, and I had all kinds of visors, all different colors. I had this green and white one to go along with this green and white jacket and shoes I had. I had the whole look. Now I can't do that stuff. But I want to wear a shirt in the pool, but I don't want people to assume it's to hide things that I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to be like certain people and just go on camera here and do it. Like, I remember one of the first things we ever did, and here's behind the scenes stuff I'll tell you, and then we can move on from my, you know, self-deprecating stories. One of the first things we ever did with Carton and Roberts was the show had just started, and the video came out of Syndergaard throwing on the beach with no shirt on. Like, that was like the topic of the day. It was like a week, 2 weeks into the show, max. And there was a video out of Syndergaard throwing with no shirt on. And at the beach with no shoes on. He's very into that grounding where they want to be connected to the earth and not wear shoes and everything. There's the Verdugo bunt right now. I'm watching it. Don't bunt, you idiot! Why are you bunting first and second? Nobody out. You dope. That's such weak sauce, man. That is just, that's a give up. That's Juan Soto's behind me. Let Juan Soto do it. I hate that. What a ridiculous bunt. Then he pops it up. And then in the post game, he tells you, oh, yeah, I got lazy with it. I can't do it. We'll get back to Yankee baseball in a second. But so, of course, I was approached. Hey, it would be funny. You take your shirt off. We'll, you know, you do the pitch like Syndergaard, and we'll see who did it better. You or Syndergaard? And I'm like, I'm not doing that. And they're like, why? I'm like, well, because it's one thing to, you know, be in the moment, have a funny moment, and maybe take off my shirt just being stupid. That's fine. But the bit is specifically, it's very much like the Chris Farley Saturday Night Live Chippendales skit, which apparently, I had no idea, like, haunted him. And people felt very bad, and people hated, like, all of his friends, Chris Rock, all Chris Farley's, Adam Sandler. Bob Odenkirk, who is, Saul.
Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul. Like, he wrote for Saturday Night Live. Like, all of Chris Farley's friends hate that skit. Hate the Chippendale skit with him and Patrick Swayze, because the joke was, hey, look at the fat guy dance.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live trailer, by the way?
I saw it today. I thought it looked excellent.
Yeah, it looks really good.
I'm looking forward. Yeah, they're making a movie about the beginnings of Saturday Night Live. And I guess the idea is they were up against it, and it was almost as if the executives wanted the show to fail to kind of hurt the counterculture that was going on in the mid to late 70s. So that looked actually really good. I'm going to have to check that out. And I was actually at oddly enough, two people in somewhat recent time just out of nowhere told me they worked for Saturday Night Live in the 70s. I was bartending at my in-law's restaurant one night helping out, and this guy's talking to me. And he's like, oh, you worked for the Fan? Yeah, he's like, I was a bit of a performer too. I wrote for Saturday Night Live in the 70s. I'm like, get the hell out of here. Did you really? That's awesome, blah, blah, blah. And then I was at Mass, and the priest just casually talking, he goes, now, I would have never thought that when I was working for Saturday Night Live in the early 90s. And I'm like, what?
The priest?
Yes.
What?
Yes. The priest just out of nowhere said, and casually threw it in there. It was like, now, you know, I would have never, he was telling a story, you know, relating Jesus to today's times, you know, having a homily, what they do. And out of nowhere, he just said, now, you know, if you would have told me that when I was writing for Saturday Night Live, whatever he said, when I was working for Saturday Night Live in the early 90s, I was like, you will work. Is that you, Kevin Spade? Like, David Spade. Kevin Spade, I'm losing my mind. Is that you, David Spade? I just ruined the whole joke. I couldn't believe it. He just dropped that on me out of nowhere. Working for Saturday Night Live. I was like, who would have thunk it? But yeah, I'm not going to just, you know, belittle myself to pretend to be Noah Syndergaard. But I'll sing and make a fool of myself. That I'll do. 888. So I got to figure out, do I want to buy the shirt and be comfortable and not have to put on sunblock? Or am I a self-conscious loser who thinks people are going to assume I want to wear a shirt to hide what's underneath when I don't care?